I've said that. Many things on tape.
Yeah, so I think we should introduce ourselves, I guess. I don't know what we're going to call this podcast.
There is a debate.
There's a lot of debate.
Can I say one thing, then?
If you say Talkamac, I will.
On my life, it will not be called Talkamac. I will not let Will have this.
Because Talkamac is just
My t-shirt summarizes the debate we've been having.
Would you like to read out your t-shirt?
I can't see it, but I know what it says. It says, I could change my opinion, but then we would both be wrong.
Wrong!
On the name, it says so wrong in big letters. Yeah. Yep. On the names thing, I feel that the way you people have been going is
severely downhill.
I feel like there's better things to come.
Okay.
Those were some nice starting words.
What's your suggestion? Have you got any suggestions?
I had various suggestions. I did the music mostly on that. And some of the names.
Pick a theme tune and get the name from
it. I feel like there's going to be like miles of red tape in terms of copyright and Oh, wait. Beep.
we're going to have a full-on editing it over. Just like, over all swearing.
Alright.
No, we had Ignition, but that was ruled out on the same basis as Tokamak, that you didn't know what it was unless you'd been doing this.
Tokamak. You have to like really emphasize
Ignition's quite a generic term, though.
Yeah, Ignition is nice. Yeah.
And then we could have that, the song is the theme tune, and then get this whole thing sponsored by our favourite brand of rum. That I won't mention because then they'll sue.
Right.
Okay, so I'm Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
Brilliant. We're all first year PhD students, just trying to do this for fun. Bit of outreach, I guess. We'll see how it goes.
Why did you do this, Charlie?
This specifically?
No, this course specifically.
I think
look at Fav raging at how much you haven't prepped this.
Well, why did any of us do fusion? We think it's the way to, well, we want to be able to save the planet, right?
When did you like first consider doing this?
I did a fusion based thing for my masters, but I've been interested in fusion since school. The most technologically advanced thing that we are currently doing, and it's just great to be a part of that.
Was the Masters the first time you found out about it? Because I think a lot of people...
Fusion?
Never.
Well, it was first introduced to me at A-level, just in terms of like the process that goes in the sun. I've been following the ITER project since 2010, 2011. Yes. I've been interested in fusion for a while. It's great to have this opportunity.
Welcome to the team.
Well, Andy, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my interest in fusion is a bit more... murky and tangled with other people's because I've been in and out of physics and doing other things, but I guess similarly found out about it at school, didn't follow it really, but in my third year was when I started thinking seriously about doing a PhD. It probably wasn't actually till I left university and was doing the other thing.
The other thing being energy. Selling your soul to
it's
capitalism.
It's not important the other thing. Because otherwise I mention it now and then I'll mention it in every podcast and people are going to start doing at home what you guys do to me every day when I mention it here. So
I don't know what you're talking about.
What did you do before this?
I had a job in a large accountancy firm.
We'll bleep this bit out.
Are we legally allowed to say which accountancy firm?
You definitely can, but I think you should bleep it as a swear word because that's roughly how we regard the people we used to work for.
What you're going to do is you're going to say it and I'm going to say beep, okay?
Okay.
Beep. Oh, sorry. Right.
I thought we were going to coordinate that better.
Coordinate.
3, 2, 1.
Beep.
So yeah, so I found out then, and my plan was always to leave that job, but then I applied to do this thing, having always had an interest. I guess I like to think I'm public-spirited. Doing physics that was kind of going to help in some way was an important thing for me. Didn't really care about the esoteric, let's find out how small a quantum thing we can do physics that much. So yeah, this was a natural fit. Aslan.
All right. Who else have we got? Yeah, Jack.
So I guess like Charlie, interested in fusion at school. Well, interested since I first played Command & Conquer Generals, and there was a cold fusion plant you could build.
Cold fusion.
Yeah. Why did that dream come down?
And I think it was about first year of uni. I decided I wanted to do fusion as a career, or like very loosely made the decision. But it wasn't until third year, end of third year, that I was choosing masters. I actually ended up going to plasma physics in line with what I'm doing now.
In terms of the plasma physics based masters, then?
Yeah.
Because that's an opportunity that not many people actually get.
Yeah, no, it was quite odd in that there was a guy at UCL who does plasmas.
Yeah.
Who Bab ended up working with as well. In terms of the CDT, it seemed like a really good opportunity to get back into physics, having been out of physics for a couple of years and in the world of work.
Why does everyone laugh at his job? Why is it my job? Because
Jack doesn't mention his job. We just know that he travels.
Jack doesn't have any good stories.
I have all sorts of stories, mate.
None of them involve working at the moment.
Bav, how do you
my
get
my expenses
here?
Were better. Should we explain why we laughed at the Cold Fusion thing?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Like episode 9 or 10 or something. My name is Bavin, and I am also a first-year CDT student. No, I got into Fusion. Well, I say I got into. I did like a project, a little presentation in year 10.
Was that before the beard, or was that?
This was pre-beard, like pre-beard. I had like a chubby
first
face.
Season.
And then like I went to Mongolia, came back, and I was like, got like stretched out, like a piece of blue tack.
You tortured.
You went to
something.
Like you went to Mongolia with blue
tack. Different podcast episode. Anyway, yeah. So in like year 10, like I did this presentation on Fusion and like. How I thought, like, I started looking to him, like, oh, wow, this is, like, definitely the way forward. Like, why aren't we doing this now?
Is this because you were growing up in London, you taught gangster then?
After that presentation, I got, like, it piqued my interest. I started looking into, like, what I could do over the summer. I applied for CCFE to do some summer internships. Did not get in. Not holding it against them, whatever. Eventually, I kind of put it in the back of my mind, did my degree in physics, you know. And, like, towards the end, I didn't really think about, like, where I was going afterwards. But then, like, towards my final year, I started looking at the different research areas that was available. And, like, I saw that Matthew, mine and Jack's supervisor, had this project on plasma wake field acceleration. I saw the word plasma on my ear, all right, let's do it. And here I am. I applied for the PhD. Didn't really know that York was a thing, like, before I applied.
I said that it was a place.
Vaguely. Moving on.
So, I'm Joe Allen, not the footballer.
thanks for clarifying.
You would not believe how many people ask me that. They're like, oh, are you the footballer?
The guy I had to introduce this morning
it's
is
a very
Irish
common
folk
name.
Singer.
So
really?
Yeah. Anyone who I phone up in like tech support or something, they're like, try and talk to me about football. I just want to get them to help me out. Yeah, so heard about Fusion in school, and then I can't remember when I exactly decided. I think I was in the shower one time at uni, and I'd realised, like, if I wanted to carry on and do a job in physics after my degree, I kind of been thinking, like, space is cool, could do something in space, but also there's always Fusion being there as, like, as Charlie said, like, cutting edge of human endeavours. And I was in the shower and just sort of, well, I'd already been thinking it, but the epiphany sort of formed itself in my mind that it was either space or Fusion. And really, For humanity to become like a true spacefaring civilization, we're going to need Fusion to begin with. So I thought I'd start with that as the first problem, and then try and get somewhere, and then maybe that'll help us do the space thing.
I mean,
so when you found out about the plasma thruster thing, did that just blow your mind? That was really cool. I really like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Fusion is once we've solved Fusion, that there's probably like what other what's the more technical than just controlling a sun.
See, the thing is, like you guys are saying how it's the biggest human endeavor of all time. I did not realize this. I came into this, like, not thinking it was easy, but not thinking it would be like one of the biggest and most difficult challenges humanity has
to face. Your project is all about making it not one of the biggest challenges we've ever achieved.
I mean, hopefully in 3.5 years' time, I will have a paper that says, yes, it's very, very easy.
I think you're going to get more than one paper out of this. I have faith in you.
But yeah, I literally had no idea how much of a like massive mountain it is to climb. So you guys saying that, oh, it was like, I want to go towards this biggest technical challenge. My experience was completely different. I just did not realise that.
Well, so, because I did a master's here at York before continuing to the CDT and came in super optimistic because I just sort of seen kind of media face of Fusion. And then in the lots of lectures we had, it was just continual knocks hearing about all the incredible challenges. With each of the knocks, the confidence, there's obviously like you hear about all the amazing people that are working on them and trying to solve them. But still just really appreciating how huge it is.
I think that might be a function of last year's invited speakers, though, because this year's MSCs don't seem to have that kind of slowly being...
That's true.
Slowly being adding to the list of things they need to solve before... It's like the Martian, you get a long list of stuff you need to solve before you're going to not die. Except the stakes are a little...
Well, we are saving humanity, and he's only saving one life. His own. I mean, how much more selfish could you be?
Yeah. That is actually a very good point.
That is a terrible
a selfish man.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, it wasn't the height of the challenge so much as how complex the challenge is. So what we're talking about today about the, you know, integrated bits that come into it. And so there's, you know, there's the pure physics bit, but then there's a whole bunch of people who have to do something else, and then robots in, you gotta get the,
yeah, that's something the engineers in,
we gotta get.
It's just something that you don't consider.
Yeah.
How much the robotics is a limiting factor for, like, size and maintenance.
I love all that. I love just how you know, just seeing how stuff fits together. Mm. Which is why I didn't hate being an auditor, is because I actually got to see, like, how a business fits together.
Podcast is not a part. You're like, but it's interesting.
I'm trying to convince myself it wasn't wasted year.
It was.
It was. It was great.
Yeah.
Bab, you were saying something.
Right. What was I saying?
I have no idea.
When you break down Fusion into like all the different little sub aspects that you have to think about, like it just becomes like a massive mess of like different wires all tangled together, and you just have to like untangle this mess and make it all nice and neat. So today we had a talk on remote handling. So that's how you make repairs inside your fusion reactor without having to go in because it's highly irradiated. And the amount of complexity and the amount of depth that you have to consider, the levels are just completely inconceivable to me. Like, I would never think of these things. So when Rob Buckingham?
Yeah.
When he started talking about this, I was just like, oh, wow. Like, it's just like the well is getting deeper and deeper and deeper. Like, why are we even here? But, like, you know, towards the end, I got quite optimistic. So my confidence in Fusion, like, oscillates on a daily basis. I think
your blood sugar was low, is all that was.
It is a very broad problem, but I think a lot of these problems can be, well, like any problem, you just put it down to size, put it into manageable chunks, and
start doing things.
You can see how you get to it. So we started talking about what you're actually going to be doing as part of your PhD. So, what? Tell us a little bit about that, Bav.
So, my PhD is titled In Search of Compact Routes to Fusion. After a couple more episodes, this will make a bit more sense why we'd want to do that. But essentially, the current ideology is that in order to make fusion work, we need to make the devices bigger, and making them bigger is both advantageous and disadvantageous. And I'm possibly looking at solutions to making them smaller and seeing how that would affect it. There are a lot of different reasons why making them smaller would be challenging. I was going to say advantageous.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say advantageous. I thought I'd say challenging.
Okay, well, yeah, there's a bunch of different reasons, but I personally think going small is definitely a good way to go. We recently, yesterday had a talk on how small modular reactors in the fission community and like what kind of progress they're making, and I think something similar could be applied to fusion. And if you did have this modular system, then a lot of the challenges would be a lot easier to overcome.
And Joe, in words that a child could understand, what are you doing?
I'm pure sentences that Dab used.
So, lots of people put bits of metal into plasmas to figure out what temperature they are.
Yeah, no, this is brilliant. Right. What are those bits of metal called?
Langmuir probes.
Nice.
And I'm doing that on a computer. So we can figure out better what temperature of plasma is when we do it in real life. Okay.
Well, Josh just made a very good point that maybe not everyone listening to this knows what a plasma is.
The sun is a plasma.
The sun
is a fire is a plasma. Bit at the top of fire.
Anyway, Charlie, would you like to explain what a plasma is?
Bab, as you may or may not know, plasma is a fourth state of matter.
Quick, write it down.
So you've obviously got your solid, liquid, and gas. And plasma is just what happens when you heat up a gas to a state where you're ripping the molecules apart. So you're taking the electrons off and you're just leaving yourself with some electrons and some nuclei.
So what was the official definition we had from our intro course on the master's degree? It was an ionized quasi-neutral gas that exhibits collective behavior. Ionized is the electrons are detached from their, well, whatever atoms they started out with, a bit like a metal. Quasi-neutral, there is roughly the same amount of positive and negative charge in all regions, if you go even, you know, fractally, so globally, but also locally. And collective behavior, you've got to have more than one atom. Basically, you have to be able to pass a wave through it for it to constitute a plasma.
How about you, Joe? What do you work in?
So I use microwaves to probe the edge of plasmas, as we just had them talked about. Microwaves are a type of radiation, just like visible light, and can do things like fire microwaves at plasmas and see how they reflect. And that tells us things about the plasma, which we need to know if we're going to get energy out of it. Fusion plasmas actually emit microwaves, so we can measure these and find out more things.
Charlie?
The majority of my project will be working with Joe. Our diagnostic is called SAMI, standing for Synthetic Aperture Microwave Interferometer. So, aesthetic...
Imager.
Imager, damn it. To be fair, we do a little bit of interferometry, don't we? So, aesthetic...
Charlie, so what about your project?
So, a synthetic aperture, much like you have radio telescopes, so big dishes all separated, and you can use those to get pinpoints of whatever you're trying to look at and then stitch together to get a total image. Just means that we can have higher resolution of our picture of the plasma without actually needing an antenna for every single point that we want to look at. But I specifically work on just collecting and processing all the data, really.
There's a lot of it.
There is a lot of data. So the old system had close to 8 gigabytes of data per second. So you're talking about Blu-ray's worth of video every single second passing through. So, yeah, lots of data.
Do you keep all of it?
Yeah.
Do you do any analysis like real time, or do you just like store it all in a hard disk and then analyze it later?
Yeah, so really it's too much data to do to look at it in real time. One of the things Joe's probably going to be working on is using graphics processors, so stuff that you would use in your computer to run your games, to look at the data after it's been collected.
Andy?
Hello.
What do you do?
It occurs to me that we should caveat that all the people in this room work on fusion with magnets, and there are people who do fusion with lasers for whom none of this is relevant, but they may or may not be involved at a later date. Because we've done that thing where we strip all the electrons off, we essentially have two species in our plasmas, which is all the negative electrons going one way and all the positively charged ions going the other way. Which is essentially a fluid problem. Fluids are turbulent and chaotic in exactly the way that air around an aircraft is turbulent. And that's one of the things that's been significantly underestimated in the initial kind of guesses of how long fusion would take. And so my job is to, on a particular reactor, but using a sort of generic technique, is to put some numbers on that, basically. So we measure the light coming out of the turbulence, from which we infer the density in that place, and then we can say something about how big that turbulence is and which way it's going and how fast it's going, and hopefully that will let people who do modeling and other things better understand how to not make it turbulent and how to keep it all in the one place rather than slamming against the wall and being lost.
So a common thing most of the people who don't really know a lot about fusion will hear is, why is it not here? Like, why is fusion always 30 years away or 20 years away or X number of years away? This is a question. It's really hard. How does that make you feel?
It's a misguided perception. I think it's a fair question.
I think it's a fair question given the amount of coverage that fusion gets. And not just the amount, but the type of coverage. Because whenever people talk about fusion, it's been delayed again. You never talk about the amount of money that hasn't been spent. And okay, it is a very expensive project, but like we've been talking about, it's the most technologically advanced project that anyone has ever undertaken.
And it promises something like unheard of.
Yeah, so...
gold at the end of the rainbow.
And yeah. It's actually there.
I mean, usually when people make these promises of 30 years away, they have been promised more funding than they've actually given. Take the example of, say, the Manhattan Project. They managed to just about kickstart fission, so what powers normal nuclear power stations, and that cost almost, I think it's almost $20 billion adjusted for inflation. And so you're talking about something that's just trying to blow something up for 20 billion, and yet we're complaining about constructing a sun on the planet for the same amount.
I mean, this is harder than CERN. This is harder than the Apollo mission.
CERN, you're just banging stuff together.
Choosing one thing. That's, you can do that.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. So the reason I say I think it's a fair question is part of a discussion we had last year was about comparing the way we get reported to the way astrophysics gets reported. And astrophysics has lots of lovely pictures of galaxies, and that helps them a lot. But also, it seems to be much, much easier to take small incremental discoveries. Say, for example, you discover 7 planets in a foreign star system that are interesting in some way. It's much easier to get coverage for that. There are a number of small steps to get reported, whereas fusion was always, and I think it's because we've shot ourselves in the foot by saying, we have this goal at the end of the rainbow, that the only question people ask is, have you done that yet? No, why not? Rather than saying, well, what steps, what little things have you done along the way? Because we've made a huge amount of progress. And there's a huge amount of technical understanding and physics understanding that's grown in that time. We've not been idle. We just haven't got to the end, that target at the end of the roadmap yet.
Yeah, I think a better question is not how much time is left, it's how much more money needs to be spent to get fusion going. It's always about how much money you spend on these things, and there is a cost.
That's still fundamentally in search of the end goal, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether we should frame it as slow progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think framing it as the end goal of, okay, so we need to spend another 50 billion. You give us 50 billion and we will have a fusion power plant.
Surely that's just pushing the problem back, because like, instead of giving them a time, you're giving them some random arbitrary amount of money that they say, oh, if you give us this much money, we'll give you fusion. Like, that's, again, very risky business, because you could run to the end of that 50 billion and still not have fusion.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be like, oh, you guys always say that fusion requires another 50 billion.
Yeah.
But the problem with the time limit is that the funding has always been cut.
But the timing is contingent on funding. Right?
Yeah.
You build your roadmap on the basis of, we got this much money this year, we expect to get this much money in the next 5 years. Well, we give us the resource to do this bit.
But that money has never come, so we're saying...
No, I think it's quite often come. I mean, in the US, you've got your budget cut.
It's been massively undercut.
Yeah, and do you know, remember, a couple of months ago, we got shown a graph done by the states in like the 70s.
Yeah.
And they showed, like, given this much funding, how long fusion will take. And you got different lines saying, if you give $100 trillion, we'll get fusion tomorrow. If you get given a couple of $100 billion, you get fusion at that point and this point and this point. And then there was this little sad, depressing line saying, if you have funding less than this, then fusion will never happen. And the funding for fusion has been like at 10% of that. Yeah. Like, we're not even close to what
below
the lowest limit.
And we still made progress that's better than Moore's law.
This was the claim, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Moore's law being that computing power will double in power or double in
computing capacity.
It's a bunch of different things. But like every 1.8 or 2 years or something. Which, incidentally, is apparently slowing down.
Yeah, since 2007, not really been true. So we're doing better than them.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't look after...
On a long scale, you ignore that one and drop that one out. And account for that,
So I think this has been a good little introduction. Yeah?
I'm sure we'll come back to the 30 years thing.
Well, I haven't had my fight section yet.
Your fights. We could still include your fight section.
As long as we finish with it, yeah.
Okay. What's the fight section?
Well, I come to you guys with a fight between two things.
Should we do that as the outro?
Yeah.
Is it fusion versus?
No.
It's like...
the bear versus the gorilla thing.
Yeah, clearly the gorilla would win. But,
I mean, you're the only one who thinks that.
No.
The gorilla would definitely win.
The gorilla would not win. The bear's like twice its size.
One swipe.
Twice the shaved bear.
One swipe.
So we've had a little intro about who we all are, so you can
get to know us.
Verbally picture us.
Yeah.
So you actually slightly care about us, maybe.
Pick your favourites.
So that then when we go on in future episodes to talk about other things in fusion, it's not just some random person. You do kind of know who we are.
Yeah. And this, we've probably been throwing out a lot of like random words that you may or may not understand. We will go through all of these, and we will explain all of these in future episodes.
Not necessarily in any order.
There will be an order.
Will that?
We will have a well-structured podcast.
Beautiful.
We will
always finish with a fight.
And we will possibly always finish with a fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what's your fight scenario, Jeff?
So, given that we have
Mortal Kombat fight.
Fight. Well, given that we've not concluded, obviously the fight between the bear and the gorilla.
We have concluded. That's wrong.
Well, no.
No. Yeah. The bear would win.
We have
the gorilla's got agility. It's got speed. Like
a gorilla is stronger than 10 of the strongest humans combined.
And how many is it to a polar bear stronger than?
Wait, grizzly bear?
Is it a polar bear?
It's a grizzly bear,
which is essentially the same thing.
No, polar bears are bigger.
They're bigger, but they're less muscly.
That's true. I think that's actually true.
Okay.
You think?
I don't care what bear it is. A bear wins.
Predators.
short of a baby bear.
Little black bear.
Black bears are pretty small.
Yeah.
100%, I definitely think a gorilla would smash.
I'll back the silverback against the black bear.
Yeah,
that's Canadian as well.
We could switch it to what could drink more undiluted squash. Gorillas set the bar pretty high. 4 liters.
4 liters.
Yeah, one broke out a zoo and drank 4 liters of undiluted squash.
What happened to it? Is it alive?
I think it passed out.
Sugar coat.